Good morning and welcome to Spotlight on Industry. I'm your host, Sam Mason. Spotlight on Industry is a program where we take you inside our region's manufacturing plants and processing facilities so that we can learn about the goods they produce, where they go when they leave the plant, and the impact these facilities have on our local economies. So far on this program, we've explored a variety of industries such as steel, motor assembly, paper tubes, and nursery plants. This month, we go in yet another direction and shine our spotlight on a company in St. Joseph, Missouri that is rooted in family history and ingenuity. Gray Manufacturing in St. Joseph, Missouri has been designing, manufacturing, and selling lifting equipment since 1952. What is lifting equipment, you ask? Well, anytime a car or truck goes into the shop for repair or maintenance, it needs to be lifted off the floor so the mechanic can get under it safely to perform the work. This is serious equipment that is designed to lift a fully loaded truck right off the floor. It's portable, durable, and dependable. Now, ordinarily on this show, I strive to paint a picture with words that will help the listener visualize the products and processes being made by our guests. In this case, the equipment made by Gray Manufacturing is seldom seen by the ordinary public, so I will acquiesce to the fact that a picture is worth 1,000 words and tell you that if you're near a computer, now might be a good time to go to their website at grayusa.com to take a look at the equipment that I'm about to describe. Picture a U-shaped tubular frame that sits flat on the floor. Now picture that frame sitting on 4 heavy-duty caster wheels so that it's portable. Picture a cylindrical housing that contains either a pneumatic or hydraulic lift that sits at the bottom of that U and stands up vertically. Inside the U-shaped frame is a steel shoe that slips around the underneath side of a vehicle tire. The equipment is designed so that it can be brought to the vehicle rather than the vehicle brought to a permanently affixed set of equipment. Now, picture 4 of those units placed under the tires of a fully loaded box truck and operating simultaneously to lift it 74 inches off the floor. That is some serious lifting power. The power of the lifts is impressive, but what makes Gray Manufacturing truly unique is their dedication to Made in the USA manufacturing. Every component of their products, with the exception of springs, seals, and wheels, is made in-house. They even assemble the electronic circuit boards in-house to assure complete quality control. In a day and age of outsourcing and strict attention to the bottom line, not many companies in the United States hold themselves to the principle that Made in the USA is what keeps this country great. So, in the spirit of the 4th of July and all things red, white, and blue, I sat down with CEO and Northwest Missouri State University alumnus Pete Gray to talk about his family's company. As an added bonus, we were joined by his father and company co-founder, Joe Gray, who shared with us the company's history as well as his love of the original American artwork that adorns every wall and workspace of their corporate offices. Stick around as we shine the spotlight on industry.
Support for Spotlight on Industry on KXCV KRNW comes from Nottoway County Economic Development. Coordinating economic development services for the City of Maryville, Nottoway County, and the Maryville Industrial Development Corporation. Their services include finance and incentives development, site location, industrial development, and small business assistance. More at maryvillemo.org. And from Mazingo Lake Recreation Park. The park provides Nottoway County residents and visitors with an 18-hole golf course, driving range, and a 9-hole junior course coming 2015. More on Mazingo's golf offerings is at mazingolake.com. Support also comes from the City of Maryville, Missouri, offering residents and visitors opportunities in education, employment, health care, and recreation, as well as agricultural, industrial, retail, and professional services. More information about the City of Maryville is at www.maryville.org.
Welcome back to Spotlight on Industry. I'm Sam Mason. If you're just joining us, this month we're shining the spotlight on Gray Manufacturing in St. Joseph, Missouri. I had a chance to sit down with Chief Executive Officer Pete Gray and his father, Joe Gray, to learn about the family's company. Pete, I know that Gray Manufacturing is a family company and you have a very unique product. So first, tell us about your product and its applications.
So Gray Manufacturing designs, manufactures, and sells professional service equipment for the automotive and truck industries. More specifically, we make hydraulic and pneumatic jacks for anything over the road. We do make lifts that lift overhead. Some of them lift high enough for removal of driveline components as well. One of the key distinctions is that we sell professional equipment. This is not what you would find on the shelf of a Walmart or an automotive parts store or something that you would have in the truck or the back of your vehicle for service when you have a flat tire. Ours is more for professional service garages and technicians.
So if I take my car into the shop, what I traditionally see is a lift that comes right up out of the floor. Your lifts are completely portable, correct?
That is correct. The primary product that we have is a portable version. This allows for a lot more flexibility in the shop because the bay in which our product is used is not completely dedicated. They can be removed and something else can be done in that shop bay.
And so what was it that inspired your father and your grandfather to invent this product?
So my grandfather was a tinkerer by background, not formally educated, however very good mechanically. He had operated tire shops from the early 1920s to include a Goodyear tire shop, and the more he worked with vehicles, the more he realized there was no good way to lift them to service the vehicles that he was working on. He had a general concept of how to lift a vehicle from the bumper so that he could have access to the tires. And my dad was an aeronautical engineer, and he joined my grandfather to help design the first bumper jack.
How did they go about lifting vehicles before that?
I think any means necessary. They had some mechanical jacks and some other ways to have access to the tires, but ours was very unique in that it was pneumatic. It was completely air-powered, and it was quick and easy and safe.
As I mentioned in the introduction, we were joined during the interview by Pete's 92-year-old father, Joe. I asked him to expand a little bit on the company history and what inspired his father to design the company's first lift.
Well, he had been a tire dealer for many years. He was a Goodyear tire distributor. And when World War II came along, he could not get tires to sell. And so he started retreading and recapping. And then he couldn't get the rubber to make the camelback that they put on the tire to create the new tread with. And so he had to make some of his own equipment to do what he wanted. He'd always kind of manufactured as a sideline. His first patent was a 1921 for a jack to lift the old Model Ts and that vintage of cars. The feature that it offered is one where they turned the screw to lift it, and the jacks up to that time had a screw that went up 6 inches or whatever, and then it stopped. But that wasn't when they were out on the road, the bottom of the jack would sink into the mud or ground, and they couldn't get the wheel off the ground. And so he made it where when the first screw stopped, another screw took over and gave it another 6 inches or 5 inches, whatever. And that worked. But he was forced, really, to get into manufacturing his own things because in the days that he started in the industry, equipment just wasn't available. And he had been born and raised on a farm where he was what they called a tinkerer. He knew how mechanical things worked. He could build them. And anyhow, he saw the potential out there for the market for some good quality products. Now, the competition that we faced when we got into the market were anywhere from 3 or 4 times up to 30 times our size, I guess you'd say 40 times, maybe even more. But they had no customer service. They had no parts in stock. If you had a thing that broke down, you had to send it to a repair depot. They had those all over the country. And those guys, their qualifications were iffy at best. basically they would start replacing parts in it until it started working. They didn't know anything about how they functioned. So it was very expensive to get them done and time-consuming. It took months to get one repaired, and then you put it back in service and use it a couple of times, and it wouldn't work again. So anyhow, he saw the need to get in and give better service to the customer. And so our focus from day one was that the customer is the boss, and we have to make products and give him better product quality, versatility, flexibility, or whatever, state-of-the-art, if you will, than our competitors do, and then back it up with better technological support and better parts availability when they need them, because everything wears out eventually and you have to replace it. As an old tire man, he saw a need for equipment for the tire shops especially. And that's where we got the idea. He had the idea to develop the first lift. Well, he and I worked together on that, and we developed the what we call the Model 100 end lift to pick up cars and light trucks. And that's pretty well how we got our start, I guess you'd say.
Regarding the company history, I'd like to say that going back to my grandfather and my dad, when my grandfather recognized the need for something to lift a vehicle and they developed the first bumper jack, we built our base of customers on the small mom-and-pop service garages. They would build as many as they could get in the back of my dad's truck. He would drive them around the local areas and drop them off for 30-day trials, no questions asked. Come back and pick it up if they did not wish to keep the jack. And that's how they really started the company. If you go back and look at that time frame, my dad talked about competing in the Kansas City and Chicago and St. Louis areas was very difficult. In those days, every single small town had several small dealerships, car dealerships. They would go into those places where they did not have the competition that they had with the bigger cities, and they were able to build our business on those type of car dealerships in small towns, and that's still the core of our business. But we've been fortunate enough over the years to develop some relationships with some very large companies, like Walmart is a good customer of ours, Penske, Coca-Cola, UPS. As you mentioned, the federal government, and we sell also to state DOTs, municipalities, First Student, who operates all the school buses. So we've been very blessed with a broad and diverse customer base.
And your product is, of course, it's a very durable product. It doesn't wear out.
No, and that is kind of the internal joke here, is that we need to build in some obsolescence, but you know what it does do is it helps our customers become successful, and when they are successful, they grow, and we ultimately sell them more product as they grow larger and their operations expand.
Tell us a little bit about some of the other products that Gray manufactures. I know you have a whole line of products other than the lifts, so what are some of the other things that you manufacture?
Sure. We talk about lifts, and when we talk about lifts, that's anything that lifts the vehicle overhead. We also have a lot of jacks, anything from floor jacks that you can roll under and lift the vehicle by the axle. We have component jacks that help you with the removal of transmissions, clutches, and differentials. We have some accessory equipment like fluid handlers to include antifreeze handlers and oil handlers. We have oil filter crushers, a line of support stands, just a broad array of hydraulic and pneumatic service equipment, anything our customers request.
You had said that these lifts are used in the automotive industry, trucking industry, but one of your clients is the military, is that correct?
That is correct, yes. We sold to the military for a number of years. We've had government contracts. We have product not only here in the U.S., but we have it over in Afghanistan and Iraq with the war efforts there as well.
So whenever they load up trucks, they load up heavy vehicles to be taken anywhere in the world, your lifts also go on those trucks or on those transports?
Yes, they will go with the vehicles to wherever their service facilities are.
Well, that has to make your company feel good knowing that you're supporting our troops, supporting those missions overseas.
Very much so. There's a lot of pride with our employees in that. We have photos and stories that have been sent back from the war efforts that have been very complimentary and make you feel very proud of what we do.
And your company, you pride yourself on being American-made, correct?
Yes, our employees are very proud of that fact. We have heard so much about outsourcing over the last 20 years. We're starting to hear a lot more resourcing. We never went down that track. We have always had all of our product made in the USA, and our folks are very proud of that fact.
And are all the components that go into a unit made in the USA also?
Most of the components are. There are several things, some of the electronic green boards and things that just simply cannot be sourced in the U.S., but everything, the primary content of our product is all made in USA.
And so you had mentioned that your employees take a lot of pride in that. Tell us a little bit about the culture of your company.
Sure. We are family-owned and operated, but much more importantly, we are family-oriented. We have a lot of people with a lot of years of service. Frankly, I grew up with a lot of these folks. We have 40-plus people now that have been here 25 years or more. We do a lot of things outside of work. We have company parties that include going to the local baseball team here or seeing the Kansas City Royals. We have an annual skating party for the children at the local roller skating rink where Skating Santa comes out and gives gifts away. We have open houses in which our employees can have their families come tour through the facilities. They get to see what it is that their mom does, their dad does, their spouse does, and meet the people that they work with. We recently had an outing at the Boy Scout facilities here where we did anything from zip lines to swimming and just anything that brings us together. And the importance of all that for me really is that while we're concentrating on building quality professional service equipment, we also have each other's back, and everyone here wants to see everyone else be successful. And that's really is what's made us very unique in who we are.
So how many employees do you have here at Gray?
Well, we've just gone through a lot of growth, and it's been a challenge, but it's a good challenge, the kind we like. We are currently at 180 employees. I would say about 6 months ago, we were about 140. It's been a challenge, but a fun one. We've had a lot of growth in some of our distribution and some of our largest accounts. We've also been blessed with a good economy as well.
One thing that I did want to ask you about, it is impossible for a person to walk through your offices and not be taken in by the artwork that is on the walls. It's absolutely amazing. I'm sitting here looking over your shoulder at a beautiful seascape, rocks, sailboat out on the water. What is the story behind all the artwork that I see?
The artwork is my dad's passion. I would say it was 7 or 8 years ago he began collecting artwork, and it's become very good for everyone in the offices. It's interesting to watch people ask for and position for certain pieces of art to be in their offices. They enjoy it very much. He enjoys that fact, and it's something that's brought him a lot of pleasure.
Passion is an understatement. When I said that art hangs on every wall, I mean every wall of every office, every cubicle, every hallway, entryway, and other space. This is beautiful, original art by, of course, American artists. A great deal of it has a Western theme, but it spans other genres as well. I've been through art galleries that didn't have as fine a collection. I asked Joe to expand a little bit on the art, and he told me a story about the president of their sister company, Vectech, who had no interest in art whatsoever. Joe instructed their in-house curator, yes, they have one of those, to find something he might like. He told the curator that this president was a farm boy, so maybe something that was farm-themed might be in order. She found a piece by an artist named Pat Pauly, who had done a number of pieces for Field & Stream magazine. This artist had also done a painting of his parents' farm for the National Wild Turkey Federation, where he had cleverly included the Federation's logo into some clouds. Well, Joe purchased the painting and had it hung in the president's office. What happened next came as a surprise and made a lasting impact on the company. I'll let Joe finish the story.
I said, that would be an interesting one to hang it there. So Dorothy hung that in front of his desk, and a couple of weeks later, she was walking down the aisle, and he said, hey, Dorothy, come in here. I want to show you something. She said, what, Joy? And then he said, he walked around. He says, look, there's turkeys in those clouds. I never saw those before. And anyhow, he started looking at it, and then he did a flip-flop. Boy, you'd think he invented art now. Anytime an artist comes to town, he wants to visit with them, and And he told me that, he said, you know, I never thought of it, but our he's good with numbers. And he said, our productivity in the offices went up 9.2 or 3% after we put that art in there and redecorated. And he said, I just couldn't believe it. So the point, part of my hopes is to get art in the office as a theme for businesses around the area, because we have a lot of good artists. You can buy good artwork from a local artist who isn't known for about the same price you'd pay for a good print. There's a difference in original art and a print. And the way I describe it best is like you've had an old friend for 50 years and he dies and you go out to the funeral home to visit him. He's all prepped and he looks pretty much like he always looked, but something is missing. And the original has that something missing in it. It's got part of the artist in that they can't capture in a print. Mm-hmm. And anyhow, it's really fun. I know most of the artists and I haven't met one yet I don't like.
Well, it's interesting, it's fascinating, and I enjoy whenever I've come to visit with Pete to look around and see all the paintings, and adds so much to your office. It really is beautiful.
Well, thank you.
Well, Pete, the last question I want to ask you is simply, what is it that you want people to know about Gray Manufacturing?
The primary things is that, as I said, we're not just family-owned and operated, but we're family-oriented. Our folks are very, very passionate about Made in USA. Also, the sense of ingenuity. We talked about Made in USA, but we also design our own product. We don't outsource the engineering. We've had over 50 patents awarded to us over our history, and that's something that we're very proud of. We've also had licensing agreements for some of those patents because they've been so popular.
So, Pete, thank you very much for your time this morning. We look forward to going on a tour and seeing how these jacks are made.
Thank you, Sam. I appreciate it.
Pete's father will be 93 next month and still comes into the office every day. Pete told me that it's an amazing privilege to get to work with his dad every day and learn from his experience. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, we'll go on a tour of the plant with Pete, Company President Stett Shaughnessy, and Vice President of Operations Mike Hurst. Stick around.
Support for Spotlight on Industry on KXCV KRNW comes from Nottoway County Economic Development, coordinating economic development services for the City of Maryville, Nottoway County, and the Maryville Industrial Development Corporation. Their services include finance and incentives development, site location, industrial development, and small business assistance. More at maryvillemo.org. And from Mazinga Lake Recreation Park, the park offers residents and visitors camping facilities for tents and RVs, as well as lakeside cabin rentals. Mazinga Lake also offers boating, fishing, hiking, and equestrian trails. More information about Mazinga is at mazingalake.com. Support also comes from the City of Maryville, Missouri, offering residents and visitors opportunities in education, employment, healthcare, and recreation, as well as agricultural, industrial, retail, and professional services. More information about the City of Maryville is at www.maryville.org.
Welcome back to Spotlight on Industry. I'm Sam Mason. If you're just joining us, we've been visiting with Pete Gray of Gray Manufacturing in St. Joseph, Missouri. Pete led us on a tour of their plant along with Company President Stett Shaughnessy and Vice President of Operations Mike Hurst. Now, traditionally on the tour segment of this program, we focus on the step-by-step process of assembly. This month, we're going to do that, but since there are so many parts and pieces to Gray's products, we're going to focus a little more on their manufacturing methods rather than the step-by-step process. In just a moment, we'll take that tour, but before we do, I want to expand a little bit on something that makes Gray Manufacturing truly unique over other companies. During the interview, you heard Pete mention that almost every part of their lifting equipment is made in-house. Now, all manufacturers have a supply chain. That's the string of outside companies that provide the various parts and pieces of the final product. Some companies, like Kawasaki that we visited back in April, make some of the parts in-house and then order the rest from outside vendors. All of these parts and pieces arrive at the assembly plant just in time to be built on the line. This is known as horizontal integration, and it's a very traditional method of assembling a final product. The risk associated with this method is that it puts the manufacturer at the mercy of these outside vendors in terms of quality and delivery. A chain is only as strong as its weakest link, right? If a vendor falls victim to a strike, natural disaster, fire, flood, accident, or some other calamity, the system breaks down and the result just has a trickle-down effect. What many companies have done to avoid this and keep things running smoothly is migrate to the opposite method called vertical integration. This means that a single company owns all or most of the vendors within its supply chain. It helps them eliminate breaks in the chain, provides better quality control of the final product, reduces transportation expenses, and decreases turnaround time. As we'll learn, Gray has taken that to a whole new level by bringing the lion's share of their supply chain in-house. In other words, they create almost every part and component in their equipment from raw stock, right down to the circuit boards that control their revolutionary Wireless Portable Lift System, or WPLS, that we'll learn about later. About the only thing they don't manufacture themselves are fasteners, springs, wheels, and seals. Gray finds that by doing the job themselves, it gives them greater control. While we were on the tour, I asked Stett and Pete to talk about their vertical integration philosophy.
That could mean a lot of different things to a lot of different companies, but for us, it's trying to control as much of the manufacturing process and operations we can. So a lot of companies would have this out to another supplier bringing this in, but we like to control it, do our own machining for quality control. Gray Manufacturing likes to engineer, design, manufacture, sell, and service, and we have all of those operations under one roof here in St. Joe. So that, for us, that's what vertical integration is, and being able to control the quality ultimately of our product for our customers.
What's fascinating about all this is truly the fact that you do everything.
We like to control everything from cradle to grave, and it gives us the ability to control quality and delivery in a way that we just simply can't. So there's operations here or processes that might be outsourced if you looked at it strictly from a financial perspective. But we could get it done less expensive maybe outside too, but we know that we can control things and have it the way we need it for our customer.
Now that we have a little better understanding of Gray's manufacturing methodology, we can begin the walkthrough of the plant. Everything starts with the raw materials, which is steel, that is unloaded every morning. We'll visit each of the departments along the way, but our tour guide, VP of Operations Mike Hurst, sums it up like this.
This is where our raw material comes in each morning. We bring in 2 to 3 trucks of steel each morning. We bring in sheet, we bring in bar, we bring in plate, we bring in tubing, we bring in hex, we bring in round, you name it, we bring it in. All of our processes flow through our fabrication area. We cut our steel, we laser our steel. It goes through our fabrication processes. We'll fold it. It'll go back to our CNC area where we machine it. Then it'll go to our warehouse. It comes out of our warehouse. It goes through our weld area. We'll weld it. It'll go through grind. It'll go through paint. It'll hit one of our 8 assembly bays, and then it's to our shipping area.
After the raw steel is unloaded off the trucks, its first stop is the fabrication shop. There are many processes that happen in this area. The square tubular steel that forms the base of the lifts is cut to length. The round tubular steel that forms the vertical uprights of their jack stands is also cut to length, and parts that come from the steel plate are cut on a giant laser cutter. That's a fascinating process, and we'll hear more about that in a few minutes. Some of the other parts that begin to take shape in the fabrication shop are destined for further processing. The solid round stock, which comes in different diameters, is cut into various thicknesses called chuckers. These chuckers are sent to the machine shop, which utilizes CNC technology. CNC stands for Computer Numerical Control. This means that a computer converts the final design of the part that was produced by CAD software into numbers. The numbers can be considered to be the coordinates of a three-dimensional graph, and they control the movement of a cutting head or drill bit. In this way, the computer-controlled cutter goes from one coordinate to another, shaping the steel chucker. A 5-inch steel chucker may have 1,000 coordinates. The cutting head goes from the first set of coordinates to the second, to the third, and so on, until it has completed all of the coordinates giving the part its final shape. As you can imagine, The equipment in this area is highly capitalized and operated by only the most highly trained and experienced machinists. Mike walked us through the area where we got to see one of these machines in action and got to visit with its operator, Chuck Stover, from Savannah.
This is our CNC area. Most of our employees back here have all been through schooling, at least through some Votech school, through some community college. Some just on the job training, but mostly some extra stuff. This requires a lot of math and other areas back here. This is definitely our highly capital area. Most of these machines you see, this one's brand new, $300,000. This one brand new, $300,000. Those two over there were $500,000 by the time we brought them in. So all the machinery you see back here was very expensive. So like I said, this is where the people that's trained, you know, a guy comes in and crashes one of these machines, could be a $100,000 repair. So we do bring in new guys back here, but they're not just turned loose on a machine. They're worked with a more seasoned guy for months, maybe even a year before they're turned loose.
What are you making today? We're doing an OD turn, facing an OD turn, drilling, boring, and we'll flip it over and do a facing and a chamfer on the backside.
Okay. And what exactly is this part used for?
It's a piston downstop ring for the HTJ, is it?
Yeah, that's what it'll be. Yeah. Our transmission jack, automotive transmission jack.
This is a piece of bar steel, roughly the size of a hockey puck.
That's going to come in a 12-foot piece, and we're going to cut it into inch and a half pieces.
Okay, so inch and a half.
That's a chucker part. We call them a chucker part.
Inch and a half thick by 4 inches in diameter. So can we peek inside here?
Sure.
So how long does it take for that piece to be milled?
What's the cycle time on Chuck?
About a minute and a half.
A minute and a half. You're talking about a 30 horse machine though. I mean, he's taking some major cuts of steel.
So this is essentially a lathe, right?
Exactly. Exactly what it is, a lathe.
And so in the end, we've taken a dark piece of bar steel about the size of a hockey puck, and we've milled it down to still roughly the same outside diameter, but now it's nice and shiny with a smooth bore hole in the middle of it.
All okay. In less than 2 minutes.
Once we finished touring the CNC area, we went back through the fabrication shop to watch another new piece of equipment they're very excited about, and that's their 4,000-watt laser cutter. When walking up to it, one can't help but be impressed by it. The machine consists of two parts, the tower and the cutting table. The tower feeds sheets of steel plate onto the table where a gas-fueled laser moves over it to cut out the parts. It operates much the same way as the CNC machine, but instead of operating in a three-dimensional basis, it moves on a two-dimensional plane. It works on the same principle as a plotter printer, except this one will cut through 1-inch thick steel like a hot knife through butter, Mike explains.
This right here is our 4,000-watt laser. If you can picture it, this basically brings in a little nitrogen gas, puts some electricity with it, runs it through 18 mirrors, and it'll cut inch steel.
Inch thick steel.
If you can picture our process down through here, if you'd have been in here 4 or 5 years ago, you would have seen about 6 different punch presses, all the way down from a 45 ton up to a 200 ton, with blanking dies going boom, boom, boom all day long. Everything was hard tooled. That's how we made all of our parts. Now we brought in the laser. This laser will bring, you'll cut a certain thickness each time. It takes a sheet of steel. They'll program it, get the best sheet utilization. We may nest 4, 5, 6 different parts on this sheet. The machine will run it, it'll come out to the back, and we pull all the different sheets out of this. What you see there is a skeleton, that's what will be left. What you see here, this is our tower. This is where we bring our raw material in. This machine right here, we can load 3,000 pounds of material in each drawer. This machine runs lights out on weekends and evenings. We bring in our raw material, we load it in the drawer, put it in the computer, it knows what thickness, what gauge is in each drawer. You load up all the different nests you see here in the system, it'll bring the sheets down, it'll just keep going until, it'll run until you load the 2 output tables until they're over capacity and weight.
So you can load this machine, it doesn't need an operator, you can push the start button on Friday evening, and by the time you come back on Monday morning, all the parts are cut out, it's all stacked off and ready to go.
You see a camera up there, the guy runs this department, he can watch this. If this machine errs out for some reason, say you get a slug caught in there, we'll get an email over the weekend. Somebody comes in, answers the message, does whatever, gets the machine back going and keeps on cutting.
Interestingly, most of that pounding that you hear in the background is being done by Pete's son, Zach. He's 19 years old and going into his sophomore year at Missouri State in Springfield. He asked his dad if he could work in the family business this past summer, so Pete put him to work on the toughest job in the plant, which is exactly where he started. He takes the sheets of steel that have been cut on the laser, knocks out the parts, and stacks them off onto a pallet so that they're ready for the next step of the process, which is the brake press. The brake press exerts 285 tons of pressure on the steel parts to bend them into their correct shape. The next area we visited was the cylinder shop. Many of Gray's products have a steel cylinder that houses the hydraulic or pneumatic component. Again, in keeping with their vertical integration philosophy, they make these cylinders in-house rather than outsourcing them to a third-party vendor. Mike explains.
This is what we call our cylinder manufacturing area. Most competitors and people, if they make a cylinder, they'd buy in a quarter-inch tube, cut it, and be done. We make all of our own tubes in-house. These parts you see here started out on the laser. There'll be a flat part back on the laser. We'll cut on the laser. We'll preform the end. We'll roll form it here. As you can see, we'll bring it over here. We'll seam weld that seam. We'll grind this seam with the hard grinder. We'll finish grind it with the flapping wheel. And what you see will be a finished cylinder done. Like I said, if you had to buy this out-house, it'd be quarter-inch wall. We make all of our own 3/16. A big thing with our customer is lightweight. He wants a jack he can move around easy. 3/16 wall doesn't seem like it'd be a lot lighter, but it is a lot lighter.
Sure.
The primary component of any jack or lift is its hydraulic mechanism. Without it, well, the equipment wouldn't do anything. It would just be a conglomeration of parts. The hydraulic mechanism is what makes a jack, and yes, they build those from scratch too. The employees in this department have the luxury of working in an air-conditioned space since the hydraulics have to be built in a clean, climate-controlled area.
This is our hydraulic room. This is where all of our hydraulics are made. The gentleman you've seen out there he's washing everything. You know, a big enemy to hydraulics is dirt. Any chip, any bit of anything in the hydraulic circuit can be detrimental to it. So everything is washed outside, is pressure washed, is cleaned out before it comes through that door and into here. All the different products you just seen out there, there's about 14 different hydraulics. All of our hydraulics are made in-house. Once again, we don't buy any of them. We make them all in-house. If you look at a lot of these components, most of these components came out of our CNC area where we very first started back there in the corner. You know, all of our hydraulic blocks are made back there on the horizontals, all the pump housing. You know, we've seen all different parts made there. All made there, come all the way down here, wash, come through a hydraulic, paint it, and put in our final jack. This is our small service jack, our FSJ-120, they're built currently.
As Mike mentioned in the beginning, once the parts are cut out, milled, formed, and folded, they are held in the warehouse until it's time to be welded, painted, and assembled. As we've mentioned many times during today's program, Gray Manufacturing makes as many of the parts in-house as possible. They not only make the parts, they make the tools and the systems that make the parts. They have a model and prototype shop where they not only develop new products, but the means to make them as well. There is no other part of the plant where this is more evident than in the small parts welding cells that they have developed. When it's time to begin the assembly of a particular product, a worker in the warehouse uses a visual aid to pick the needed parts. Those parts are hung on a custom-made tree that hangs from a rack in the ceiling. That tree then travels to the small parts welding cells. Each cell uses robot technology to weld together specific parts. A worker places the correct parts in a jig and the robot does the rest. Vice President of Operations Mike Hurst explains the process.
What we've got here, this is our small parts weld cell. This is 8 production cells down through here with all the fixturing you see. If you look on the other side of our plant, this is our welding robots. All of our robots, we bring our fixturing in, we set them up, we weld a product, we take it off, we weld the next one. Everything you see on this side, all these fixtures and tooling is set up. Nothing never comes out. What you've got is you've got a 120-foot track in behind these 8 cells. two robots travel the full length of that. They can weld, those robots can weld the same cell, or they can split up and do opposite cell. But each cell has a certain product. What you see is the guy will work in one area, he'll be loading the fixtures, he'll be pulling the parts out, loading new parts, while the robots is welding in the next cell. That's where you see the curtain pull. The robots will be welding. Once he gets everything loaded, he'll pull the curtain and go over to the other side and pull the welded parts out of there, and then a robot will travel to that cell and weld. A second key factor on the other side are old robots. Once we weld everything, they got to be loaded onto a pallet or hung up on a manual rail. If you look up here, you see these trolleys running through here. Once everything is welded on this side of the cell, the weldments are pulled out, they're pulled up on the trolley, and these trolleys, these parts will not come down until they hit assembly. These parts go through grind, through the washer, through the paint booth, through the oven, and back into assembly. These parts are never handled again. On the other side, they got to go down to grind and then come up and be manually handled. So you talk about process improvement. A big thing about process improvement is reducing the indirect labor. The indirect labor gets you nothing that the customer can pay for, nothing tangible, just cost. So we get over here, we reduce that the best we can. What you see here is we have trees. Each tree is a different product. So that tree, once all the parts are hung on that, that'll make an MM, that's our transmission jack. Every weldment to build that MM will be hung on that tree. Once it's completely done, they'll hit these buttons, that'll release that trolley to go on, and if you look, there'll be more of them hanging back here and he'll get the next trolley in. But if you see down here at the end, we've got a bunch of trolleys all hung up of the trees, and each product has its own tree.
Is this something that was developed and invented here at Gray?
I've never seen it done anywhere else. This small parts weld cell, monorail and everything, was about a 6-month project getting installed, and completion costs and everything by the time it was completely done was about $1.2 million.
This area used to be one of our bottlenecks, and when we put in our 8-bay small parts weld cell, this has really improved the productivity of Gray Manufacturing, this investment right here.
And this stays set up just the way it is.
Permanent setup.
Permanently.
Each product is dedicated to one of these bays, and this setup will always stay online right here. Setup's a big part of eliminating waste or time is I don't know how long that setup would stay. Let's say 2 hours to set that up. Well, if you can just leave that permanently set up and just move from bay to bay, you kill that 2 hours every time you run the part. So it's a big part of our efficiency gain here.
After the parts are welded and all the seams are ground smooth, they're off to the paint booth before being assembled. After assembly, each and every unit is load tested to assure its safe to use. Some units are tested twice.
If you look right through here, here's our MM transmission jack that we've seen being welded down on the small parts weld cell. It was also being ground. As you can see, here's how they come into assembly. Each assembly bay has a rail on each side the parts can come in. The parts are coming in here with the MM. They're built down at the end. This product actually it's an automatic tester. The system will pump it up and test it on its own, so the operator doesn't have to stand there and manually test it. One thing that's kind of unique with us, if you notice at the end of each of our bays, you see all these yellow test fixtures. Every Gray product is 100% load tested. If it's a 2,000 pound capacity jack, it's tested at 2,000 pounds. Every product we make is tested before it goes in the box or onto the customer. Our hydraulic is also tested the same way over in the hydraulic room. You know, whatever its capacity is, it's tested before it comes out of the hydraulic room. It's painted, it goes in the jack, and then it's tested again. So you could say our hydraulics are tested twice.
As we wrapped up our tour, they saved the best for last. In 2003, Gray rolled out a new product they call the WPLS, or Wireless Portable Lift System. With this system, a repair shop can use up to 8 units to lift a fully loaded semi-truck as much as 74 inches off the floor. This allows the mechanic to safely work under it while in a standing position. We were joined on this part of the tour by one of the design engineers on the product, Steve Rucker.
What the system consists of is you've got what we call a column lift, that you put one of those under each wheel tire assembly on the vehicle. And then the way it works is we have a controller on there that communicates lift to lift through radio communication to tell each other lift where it is height-wise and any sort of command that's being sent out. So you can go to any one of the lift columns, You push on the control box that you want to raise. It'll then send out through the radio to all the other ones that we're now ready to raise. And as they go up, they'll communicate and synchronize their heights within 3 inches all the way from ground level up to full height, which is 69 inches.
And that way you're not getting something that you're not racking the vehicle as it's
right.
going up.
Yep, it's a safely synchronized, controlled movement. Basically, the slowest lift in the set sets the speed for all the other ones. So if you've got a vehicle that one end's much heavier than the other, that heavy end, everything will stay together and go up level.
I mean, here we have four of them, so you could put
right.
You can put them under four wheels of a vehicle.
Yep, you can do sets of 2, 4, 6, or 8 units. So there's a wide range, and we got two different capacities. One model is 13,500 pounds per column. The other models are 18,500 pound. And then there's also a couple of the 18,500 models that vary in how big a tire they can accommodate. So you can see on the front of them there, the what we call the carriage, it actually engages the tire on the vehicle. It can be adjusted inward and outward for bigger or smaller tires.
And so that's something that certainly would have application in your military vehicles that
yep.
you work with.
Yep, that's exactly right. For their big flotation tires, that's on our wider model. It was actually designed around some of the military vehicles for their application.
Tell us a little bit about how this technology has evolved throughout the years since Gray Manufacturing has started doing development.
When Gray started into the mobile column lifts with the wireless portable lifting system, basically at that point in time, what you had was each column had to be connected to the next one with a physical cable. So you had a cable that you had to run from one column to the next column, and then from that column to another column. And not only that, you also had to have power cables to power the motors on board on the lift. So you had two sets of cables that you had to supply to and from every one of the lifts. With the new system like we've gotten, and actually was introduced back in 2003 by Gray, this system, you have no cables going to and from the lifts. You've got onboard batteries that supply all the power to your power unit and your motor on the unit. And then, just as we discussed before, there's a radio that takes the place of the communication cable. So it's a lot cleaner environment for the guys to work in. It's less time to set it up. And so they can get up and going without having to worry about the cabling and taking the time and the effort to run that around.
And that's all new technology that Gray has been developing?
Yeah, and actually on the wireless side of it, Gray actually holds a patent for the wireless technology to communicate on vehicle lifts from one unit to the next.
I believe we've got 7 or 8 patents to include our patent pendings on this product. And part of our whole philosophy here at Gray is we like to design a product that we can get a patent provided on that product so we can help control it in the market and have a technological advancement over our competitors in the market. So this particular product, I believe, has 7 or 8 patents on it. I would describe it as a world-class column. The last show I went to in Louisville, Kentucky, I wanted to go down and compare it to our competitors, and I know that our product is world-class. It is the best product in the world, this particular lift that we're showing, and part of it's the touchscreen technology that Steve's going to show you.
When Stephen had talked about the prior technology on these columns that our competitors brought to the table, he mentioned the cables. Those cables were referred to us by our competitors as the Achilles heel of the product. They, in a shop environment, they get driven over, they get broken, they have to be replaced, they're expensive. Also, it's 3-phase power in a wash bay. Doesn't always work real well. So there were just so many problems with the cables. We actually licensed this to 3 of our largest competitors, and with that, we estimate at least 70 to 80% of the market.
As both Steve and Stett mentioned, not only is the WPLS able to control the other units via radio communication, each unit has a control box with a touchscreen that allows the repair technician to set up and monitor the units as they're lifting the vehicle. Steve explains.
Just like any touchscreen you might have on a phone or a tablet, basically we've got a main screen where you can do different features. One of the neat things is right on board here we have a copy of the owner's manual, so if a guy needs, he can go right into that, flip through it just like he would a paper copy. Also have some video tutorials, allow them to go through and actually watch a video right there on the lift so they can learn the steps and the process of setting everything up and also how to operate the lift. And then we also have, if as long as it's in a shop with Wi-Fi, you're able to get right onto the internet. So say a guy's working on a truck and he needs to look up a wiring diagram for that particular truck, he can go out to the website, look it up, find it right there, and and he's got it right there at the lift. Doesn't have to go back into an office or anything like that to get the information.
The final question I asked to both Pete and Stett was in regard to future growth. In his answer, Stett acknowledged the importance of the WPLS product as it pertains to the future of the company.
Part of the challenge that we've had with the growth, we're up 40% the first 4 months of this year over prior year. So not only getting the production out, but all the new machines that you just saw with Mike, we've had to get them in place and move out old machines. And it's been a very, very big hill to climb.
To Pete's point, Sam, we've gone from 130 employees roughly at the end of last year, beginning of this year, and as of last week, we had reached 180. So, I mean, that is, for us, that's exponential growth, and we're just trying to figure it all out right now.
Are you going to get to a point where you outgrow this space and you have to add on more manufacturing space?
Well, that's a great question. I think Pete's dad would love to see us do that, but I think one product that we'll introduce you to at some point today is our wireless lift system. And if there's one product that drives us to maybe creation of a second line, it'll be that. With the exponential growth that we've had with that product, it's hard to keep it running through the line with 59 other products, and that one demands a lot of our attention. So that might be the one that creates our second line.
The good news is if we need to do that, we've got almost 15 acres out here that's available to us to build on.
And that was going to be my next question, if you had enough footprint on the facility here.
More cool side by that guy and his dad. They moved out here in, 96, Pete?
95, 96,
and part of that plan was to have 15 acres in the event that we ever did have to increase our footprint, so we're ready to go. Right out these doors, north and east, we have plenty of room to go.
As you might imagine, this is a fairly complex piece of equipment that is made easy to use through the touchscreen technology. Now one might think, surely the electronic components of the lift are outsourced. Nope. They do that in-house too. They have a clean room in the plant with an automated machine that actually builds the circuit boards from scratch. The technicians in that room then build all the control boxes for the WPLS units. Gray maintains total control over as many components as possible, following their vertical integration philosophy. I'd like to thank my guest this month from Gray Manufacturing in St. Joseph, Missouri, CEO Pete Gray, Chairman Emeritus Joe Gray, President Stett Shaunzi, Vice President of Operations Mike Hurst, and Design Engineer Steve Rucker. Join me next month as I chat with Rod Barr from the School of Agriculture here at Northwest Missouri State University as we talk about advancements in farming and future plans for the school. We'll also go on a tour of the R.T. Wright Farm located just north of the campus. Once again, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next month as we shine the spotlight on industry.
Support for Spotlight on Industry comes from Nottoway County Economic Development, Mazingo Lake Recreation Park, and the City of Maryville. More information on all of our sponsors is available at maryvillemo.org. Spotlight on Industry is a production of KXCV-KRNW and Northwest Missouri State University. Our editor and producer is Karen Lawrence. For more information about how your company can be featured on Spotlight on Industry, please contact Sam Mason at 660-562-1163.